Casi 890 mil personas habían muerto de COVID-19 el miércoles y 27.7 millones se habían contagiado alrededor del mundo, de acuerdo al conteo de la Universidad Johns Hopkins. Estados Unidos continúa en primer lugar de fallecimientos con cerca de 191 mil, en segundo lugar Brasil con 127 mil, seguida por la India con 74 mil, México con más de 68 mil, Perú con 30 mil, España cerca de 30 mil y Colombia 22 mil decesos. La Organización Mundial de la Salud dijo que no espera que haya vacunaciones masivas contra la COVID-19 hasta el año 2022. Las primeras dosis podrían estar listas a mediados del año próximo, pero tendrán que priorizarse para los grupos de riesgo, informa Beatriz Barral desde Radio ONU.
Las primeras dosis podrían estar listas a mediados del año que viene, pero tendrán que priorizarse para los grupos de riesgo.
Adiós. Estados Unidos. En todo Santo lo Sherelanga. Nestrele. Ka Tachaka Sherlas Chero Langa. A Chinabatol Quinare. Kaka Jochasen. A Guzanagare. Radio Libre Santa Cruz. 101.FM. Adiós, Chogotere.
Sashaying your way next, it's the Bathrop Spears Broadsides edition for, gosh, today's the 10th of September, 2020. I'm Robert Norris. We've got some bits and pieces for you. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to give you, but we'll patch something together if you stay with us. So do that.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So it's a smoky day today, somewhat like yesterday, although yesterday was a very strange day for those of you who remember, because I guess for many of you, you'll be listening to this sometime later, but on Wednesday the 9th, the sky was like dusk at noon. It was a very strange day, and that kind of continued throughout the day if you lived in Santa Cruz or parts of how far it spread. It was quite something. My concern, however, and what I'm going to be reading you from, is a story in the latest issue of Street Spirit. The bits and pieces for you, I'm not sure exactly what we're going to give you, but we'll patch something together if you stay with us. So do that.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So it's a smoky day today, somewhat like yesterday, although yesterday was a very strange day for those of you who remember, because I guess for many of you, you'll be listening to this sometime later. But on Wednesday the 9th, the sky was like dusk at noon. It was a very strange day, and that kind of continued throughout the day if you lived in Santa Cruz or parts of the San Lorenzo Valley. Who knows how far it spread. It was quite something. My concern, however, and what I'm going to be reading you from, is a story in the latest issue of Street Spirit, the newspaper that is published up in the East Bay, and it's available online at thestreetspirit.org if you haven't got access to the print copy. I'm going to try to get the print copy to the library in the next few days, and it's available when the Sub Rosa Cafe is open at the Sub Rosa Cafe. That's on Pacific Avenue, about a block from Laurel Street as you head toward the beach, right across from the Yan Flower Restaurant. But it's mostly closed, so it's kind of hard to get in there and get it. The public library has a copy, but I don't know if the public library allows people to read their magazines and newspapers these days. That's something I suppose I should be looking into, and who knows, maybe I will. But since we haven't got that ability right now, here's a story by Kate Wolf, Smoke Leaves No Escape for the Unsheltered. Early one morning, Robin Silver noticed the smell of smoke heavy in the air. "I have asthma. I've had to use my inhaler twice as much as normal," said Silver, who is unhoused. "The smog-like conditions that have settled over the Bay Area in recent weeks are unavoidable for all Bay Area residents. However, unhoused people face a disproportionate burden when the air quality is bad." Silver said that another resident of his encampment checked into Alta Bates, that's a hospital in Berkeley, because of the bad air quality. He almost definitely had chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, that's COPD. He said, a grouping of lung conditions that makes it difficult to breathe under normal circumstances. He had been talking about having trouble with the air for about a week before he decided to check himself in. Silver himself was hospitalized in 2018 during the Carr Fire, which burned in Shasta and Trinity counties. He stayed in the hospital for 24 hours and was treated for both bronchitis and pneumonia. This time around, he hadn't had to go to the hospital despite suffering from achy joints and low energy levels. "I'm just grateful I'm not doing too bad this time," he said. It's easy to ignore that there are thousands of people living outside all the time until your experience of being outside is compromised, said Cassandra Williams, the co-founder of Mask Oakland, a self-described community relief project that responds to the smoke crisis, and now the COVID crisis, in the Bay Area. This situation served as somewhat of an eye-opener, a wake-up call for people to the experience of someone on the street. Mask Oakland was founded in 2017 to provide protective masks to vulnerable populations in Oakland after the North Bay fire. The organization has raised tens of thousands of dollars from people all over the nation, mostly through the payment app Venmo. In 1 week, they were able to distribute over 13,000 masks to those suffering in the smoke caused by the CZU and NCU Lightning Complex fires. As is their practice, they have shared their bounty with organizations and volunteers in Berkeley and San Francisco. Williams, who founded Mask Oakland along with fellow activist Jay Redwoods, says she believes the constant reminder of bad air quality is why their organization has been able to raise so much money. "Someone on the street is already living in crisis in a lot of ways. This smoke is just adding on to the stress. They are the most vulnerable population here," she said. Alatis Livingston, an unhoused person and street spirit vendor living in Oakland, said he has found himself constantly straining to breathe in the smoky air. "Unfortunately, his masks don't make things much better. He says the N95 mask he has constricts his breathing even more. His more heavy-duty gas mask works better, but gets in the way of communicating with the pedestrians who he relies on for donations. Most of the time, he foregoes a mask altogether." A lot of people have said they're having headaches, he said, of the other unhoused people he's spoken to. "Things are tough. Those people are burning up out there. All kinds of toxic things are getting into the air. Air quality index, or the AQI, values over 100 are said to be unhealthy for sensitive groups, and the air quality in the Bay Area has far exceeded that, reaching over 200 in the recent weeks." So to interrupt this story, the air quality in Santa Cruz City area looks like at different points it ranges from 145 to 74, with that's all kind of difficult for people who are, it's unhealthy if you're sensitive, to moderately unhealthy, but the air quality has been at least reportedly much worse as recently as 24 hours ago. So there's some real air quality challenges, I guess would be the nice word they would use for folks who are outside, for all of us, of course, insofar as we are outside at different times. But for people who live outside, particularly difficult. And what I note in Santa Cruz, as far as I know, talking to Keith McHenry and Alicia Kuhl, McHenry is a Food Not Bombs worker, has regular listeners well know. And Alicia is Santa Cruz Homeless Union activist herself who lives outside. There are no places that people can go to get inside unless you get into a program. And if you can, because many of the spaces are full, particularly since it's of concern that, and I don't have hard stats on this, but it may well be that priority is being given to those sort of out-of-town evacuees who previously were housed, as distinguished, you know, from the ragamuffin, lowlife, wretched, mentally ill, drug-addicted, etc., etc., the stereotypes that are put upon local homeless people, that is, say, the displaced residents of Santa Cruz who used to be able to afford to live here but can't anymore because this town has become a bedroom, a community, or an investment opportunity for the well-to-do, increasingly gentrified over the years, and not helped by Tuesday City Council's decision not even to put in a token don't profiteer more than 10%, which, of course, is a kick in the ass for people who haven't been getting any money over the last 4 or 5 months with serious employment problems for those who work in restaurants and service industries. And, of course, for the unemployed, it's just continuingly bad, particularly unemployed homeless people. Anyway, continuing with this story, Bay Area health officials are advising residents to stay indoors and limit time and exertion outside. But for people who must live and sleep outside, exposure to the elements is unavoidable. When the outside air is toxic, unhoused people must deal with the ramifications of exposure far more than housed people who have access to masks, in-home air filtration, and resources that allow them to limit outside exposure or even leave town. According to a study by Canada's Center for Research on Inner City Health, people without permanent residences are already amongst the most vulnerable groups in developed regions. Often these people, who are already relegated to the edges of our cities, suffer from high rates of poorly controlled chronic disease, respiratory conditions, smoking, and mental illness, all of which make them more susceptible to disease brought about by air pollution. The air pollution from wildfires is particularly dangerous because of small particulate matter, the minuscule irritants such as ash, dust, and chemicals that are burned in the fire and carried in the smoke. This particulate matter can seep into the bloodstream, trigger heart attacks, and worsen respiratory problems. Scientists believe that it can go even further, causing additional health complications and even diabetes. For people like Livingston, who can't always use their masks, the only other option for serious harm reduction is to leave the Bay Area until the smoke clears or stay inside as much as possible, neither of which are realistic for him. Many believe that the cities and counties haven't done enough to help the unsheltered folks in the Bay Area, not to mention Santa Cruz, of course. Some libraries and other public indoor spaces have extended their hours, but no state of emergency was declared by any county in the Bay Area. Mask distribution was spearheaded by grassroots groups like Mask Oakland or fundraisers by concerned individuals. The only reason that Mask Oakland exists is because there was a failure to act on the part of local government in general. That sounds quite familiar, said Williams, experiencing inaction after the 2017 North Bay fires. It's the second year in a row. We have a new precedent. We had an entire year to put something in place, and when it happened again, local government didn't respond at all. This year is particularly challenging due to coronavirus crisis. In previous years, public libraries and homeless shelters extended their hours to act as respite centers, but not in Santa Cruz, as far as I know, with a few worthy exceptions. However, the majority of these institutions have been closed for months because of the pandemic that's up in the Bay Area, where this story is referencing, and have yet to open their doors to individuals who are looking for a place to get out of the smoke. And that's, of course, true down here as well. The fires that are ravaging California aren't going to stop anytime soon. as more people are displaced by wildfires and more unhoused people are affected by toxic smoke, the unhoused population will grow and become even more at risk. Next time conditions are smoky, experts warn to stay indoors whenever possible and stay hydrated, and if going outside, wearing an N95 mask. Mask Oakland is holding onto a stash of masks for people who may need them in the coming months, and I believe there are some people distributing masks in Santa Cruz. You might want to try talking to people at the Food Not Bombs meal, which is happening every day from, it's either noon or 1 to 6. I'm not quite sure when they start, but it's at the Laurel and Front Street. That's what I'm looking for. The Laurel and Front area, right next to the Santa Cruz Community Credit Union. And there's meals, there's clothing, there's a company. And there apparently is also masks being usually or often available there. I don't know if their masks are good for smoke particularly, probably more just COVID spreading so-called prevention masks. And also they let you get into stores that are now otherwise refusing you access unless you're wearing a mask. So anyway, this was a story in the Street Spirit newspaper from September. Bad air quality spells danger for those who live outside. That's an article by Kate Wolf, who's a reporter and weekend host also at KQED. Not sure whether it's radio or TV. And here's another story in the same issue. Protesters demand housing, not barricades, after UC Hastings settlement. This is a commentary by Jiffy Fan, P-H-A-N, Fan. Homes, not barricades. Homes, not barricades. These are the words protesters chanted as they marched through the streets of the Tenderloin on August 22nd. Some were carrying police barricades, while others held signs that read, "Defund SFPD, rent is theft, and black homes matter." Others were equipped with medical supplies and sustenance, and in the back you could hear the Brass Liberation Orchestra playing their instruments brightly to the beat of chants. Community organizations such as House the Bay, Gay Shame, Coalition on Homelessness, Senior and Disability Action, Do No Harm Coalition, Every 28 Foundation, and more joined together for the march and rally to decry the settlement between UC Hastings and the city of San Francisco, which promises to remove all tents in the area with no offer of housing. While the coronavirus pandemic and bad air quality from raging wildfires pose a threat to our health and safety, those participating still choose to be at the rally. We choose to come out and march for the unhoused people who have no other option than to breathe this air and to shelter themselves in the streets with the high risk of infection from COVID-19. Our city is our home, yet the city of San Francisco, the government, has abandoned our people living on the streets. The same streets where our public officials continue to criminalize poor and homeless people. The same streets where police brutality and anti-blackness continue to show up. The same streets where the city's solution to homelessness during the pandemic is increasing police enforcement and barricading public sidewalks during encampment sweeps. Time and time again, our society has shown no mercy to homeless people. No one can thrive in a corrupt system created by racist policies. Despite the lack of housing resources, UC Hastings Chancellor Dave Fagman articulated that his goal with the lawsuit is to, quote, clear the streets, which will leave thousands of homeless Tenderloin residents at increased risk of sweeps, COVID-19, and unhealthy air. The city has been so gentrified that the only people we see now are those who are struggling in a lively city that has slowly been transformed into a ghost town. Meanwhile, many people with privilege can look away and leave San Francisco behind because they have access to a home and a remote job during the pandemic. I love San Francisco. I love my city, but this city has failed me, said Cooper Arona, an unhoused San Franciscan and disabled firefighter who serves the local homeless community as a street medic. Our city leaders, they need to get the fuck up and stop fucking around. San Francisco's Mayor London Breed has used her power to take no action but to send police to criminalize unhoused people for the ways they survive on the streets. Not only has she refused to implement Proposition C, which should have opened 4,000 units to homeless San Franciscans, but she has also failed to implement the unanimously passed Board of Supervisors ordinance to open 8,250 hotel rooms to our unhoused neighbors during this pandemic. Instead, we see police barricades all over the neighborhood to block unhoused people from accessing the most rudimentary shelter. Our community cannot stand by the injustice created by Mayor London Breed and UC Hastings. Homeless people deserve better. We want housing for all. We want funding to go toward community services instead of the SFPD. And we demand a moratorium on all sweeps. UC Hastings should not get to determine the city's response to the needs of our unhoused neighbors. Our march wound through the Tenderloin and paused in front of UC Hastings, where a law student addressed the crowd. And he said, "For the past 2 years, I've received countless emails from my school about how they aim to be a leader in anti-bias education. And yet UC Hastings has been and continues to be nothing but a hostile and racist presence in this community," said Ava Agree, who is studying law at UC Hastings. "I'm not surprised by this, but I am sorry, because let's be clear about what is happening here. UC Hastings raised tens of millions of dollars to build a new building at 333 Golden Gate Avenue, and to pay for it, they like to fill it with eager, white, young do-gooders like myself, and they decided the only way they'd recoup their investment would be by removing our unhoused neighbors, the people on the streets in the Tenderloin nearby. Marchers passed out flyers to passers-by about the action and about how to get involved with our ongoing organizing work. Along the way, a few confused cops showed up but were unable to reclaim the barricades we took. The march for housing, not barricades, continued. The band played louder. We held our banners and signs higher, and dozens of cars honked as they circled City Hall. As we criticized as we prepared the sound system for the next speakers, we transformed the barricades into a house at the foot of City Hall. The barricade walls were adorned with our signs, and a giant tarp became the roof. The completion of the installation in front of City Hall is symbolic of what we are fighting for and the direct action we need in our community. Everybody deserves a safe place to stay during the pandemic." And that's an editorial in the Street Spirit by Jiffy Fawn, who's an organizer with the group House the Bay, which I'd never heard of until reading Jiffy's story here. And the bourgeois perspective, that is the perspective of conservative residents and perhaps UC Hastings, and certainly of the writer of this story, Heather Knight, in the San Francisco Chronicle. I'm now going to read her perspective in a September 6th story in the Sunday Chronicle stating, well, it's headline, "Tenderloin's Tents Go, But Drug Dealing Stays." So it's the focus is not on all the people who are displaced, but upon the drug dealing that remains. It's a nice card for politicians to play, particularly around election time, and has been used by years by both Republicans and Democrats as a sort of a fear idea, predicated, of course, upon the old drug prohibition war mentality, which has filled the jails and ruined literally millions of lives. And I'm not talking about drug abuse, which is its own problem, but the criminalization of people who use drugs. Anyway, here's a little of the story. Mask on, plastic gloves pulled up, her San Francisco 49ers cap pulled down over her brow. Rosa Alvarado, a 58-year-old grandmother of seven, means business. Monday afternoons are the one time she allows herself an escape from her tiny apartment on Leavenworth in the Tenderloin to gather the food and toiletries and medicine she needs for the week. It's an ever-changing challenge to map the safest route, bypassing the tents, open-air drug markets, and crowds of maskless people on the sidewalks. Her neighborhood has one of the highest rates of coronavirus in the city, but she must keep it out of her apartment. Her husband is fighting prostate cancer, and she doesn't think he'd survive it. Getting out of the house is not easy, she said. I have to be very careful. 12 weeks after the city settled a lawsuit filed by the UC Hastings College of the Law and Tenderloin Businesses, because these are the real motivators behind it, and residents, Alvarado's neighborhood has certainly improved, by which they mean to say they've eliminated the unsightly homeless presence on the sidewalks, I assume. But that only demonstrates just how grim it had gotten. The tent count has plunged from a shocking high of 448 in late May to just 21 on Friday after the last big encampment on the 300 block of Ellis Street was cleared and those living in it moved into the safe sleeping site at 180 Jones Street. City data from August 31st show about 600 homeless people living in the Tenderloin have been moved into hotels, safe sleeping sites, and shelters. Because of my familiarity with Santa Cruz so-called data on the alleged alternatives to being in tents on the street, I'm quite skeptical of this kind of figure. And what I really want to do, of course, is get someone from the Coalition on Homelessness to discuss their own sort of on-the-scene experience, because their offices are located within two or three blocks of this. In fact, I think they're located within a, even closer, within a block of Ellis Street. I don't know if it's the 300 block. The city has finally begun addressing the Tenderloin's unsafe thoroughfares after years of inaction, shutting part of Jones Street for four blocks to give people space to walk and exercise where social distancing. Part of Turk Street will be closed on Saturdays and turned into a children's play space, and parts of Golden Gate Avenue and Larkin Street will be shuttered 4 days a week for outdoor dining. In other words, the businesses and the bourgeois activities of people who are indoors already will be respected, and the folks cleared away into supposed hotels, safe sleeping sites, and shelters. That's often the claim made when any kind of sweeps are made. And so it has to be regarded, I think, with, as I said before, with real skepticism. Finally, the often unseen people of the Tenderloin, the families, the children, the immigrants, the business owners, the grandmas like Alvarado, yeah, unseen because they have homes, houses, and concrete brick-and-mortar structures to be in, not because they are being locked away somewhere, but because they have privileges that the people on the sidewalks don't have. Getting the help they've long deserved, but they need so much more. While the settlement has addressed much of the devastation that struck the already struggling Tenderloin at the start of the COVID-19, it hasn't even begun to touch the rampant drug dealing. And again, this is, to me, a code phrase that's going to justify whatever the police decide they want to do, gentrification of the neighborhood, essentially removing low-income people from an area. It's fine to talk about real medical services for people who want to get over drug addiction. That's irrelevant. And it's irrelevant to talk about real crime stats around these issues. But I don't find any of these in this article, at least not so far, and I don't think they're going to be magically appearing either. The block of Hyde Street north of Golden Gate Avenue remains a shameful, obvious, open-air drug den with young men hawking heroin and fentanyl, and those who buy the deadly products passed out and sprawled on the concrete. Won't it be a miracle if closing Golden Gate Avenue at Hyde Street for outdoor dining is what finally drives dealers away? Yeah, nice for the businesses and the upper-middle-class people who have the money to patronize these places. It's way too easy to buy drugs in the Tenderloin, and sadly, way too easy to die. New statistics from the Department of Public Health show 441 people died last year of drug overdoses in San Francisco. Notice that San Francisco, not the Tenderloin. Yet they're focusing on this one area to remove people and using the scare tactic of drugs as one of the selling points. More than half the deaths, the author continues, were attributed to fentanyl, and city officials expect this year's death tally to climb far higher. San Francisco's inertia in getting a handle on this crisis is terrible for those addicted to drugs, but also for the people who live amid the misery. Actually, they live above the misery, usually in indoor apartments. In a recent Zoom call with mothers, I've lived in the Tenderloin myself. That was some years ago, but fortunately not on the streets. Not outside on the sidewalks, I should say. In a recent Zoom call with mothers who live in the Tenderloin, arranged by La Voz Latina, a resource center for Latino neighbors on Ellis Street, the prevalence of drugs in the neighborhood was the top complaint. Carla Burgos, 31, said she appreciates that the sidewalks are mostly clear of tents now, but the dealers remain a big problem. Her 10-year-old son recognizes the transactions for what they are, and she tries to plan routes to run errands so he doesn't see the sadness. Let's keep it all hidden, folks. I'm frustrated, she says in Spanish, as an interpreter translated. It's really unfair for the children. On the weekends, she tries to take her kids outside the neighborhood and notices that just about everywhere in San Francisco lacks the Tenderloin's open-air drug dens, piles of trash, and maskless crowds who refuse to social distance. She should try the beaches in the white neighborhoods. Norma Carrera, 50, though I haven't been up to San Francisco recently, I know that's a problem in Santa Cruz at different points. It has been anyway. Although I'm not too sure about the stats for the situation over the Labor Day weekend. Norma Carrera, 50, said her 13-year-old daughter is going stir-crazy being stuck at home, and she tries to get out to stretch, get some air, see the outside world, and then go back indoors. But it feels like a risk each time, she said. Maybe feels that way, but how much of a risk is it? Many people aren't taking the necessary precautions, she said. They're not wearing their masks. They're hugging each other. They're not social distancing. It seems like it's one big party in the Tenderloin, so we stay indoors to stay safe. Margarita Mena, 60, lives in the Tenderloin with her husband, two daughters, and four grandchildren, ranging from an infant to an 11-year-old. I want to highlight that in the Tenderloin there are a lot of families with young children, she said. I'm happy kids in other neighborhoods can go out and do activities. My wish is that kids here could also do the same. Which is true in any low-income neighborhood that's underfunded and where there's lots of unemployed folks around and there's lots of neglect and, of course, lots of police enforcement, but usually not the going after major drug dealers or anything, because that's a profitable enterprise in which police are often easily corrupted. No specifics about San Francisco police, mind you, but I wouldn't be surprised. Mayor London Breed said last week that the encampment resolution team that moved hundreds of homeless people inside has been absolutely incredible and has dealt with other camps that have sprung up near the DMV, Ocean Beach, and DeBose Park. Not sure which, though she said she knows many more neighborhoods want help, too. I know so many people in this city are tired and frustrated, and also there, sadly, is a lot of poverty and a lack of housing and resources for so many folks. It is something we are working hard to address. Actually, I think they're working hard to ignore it, but I'm not in San Francisco. She said that while the sidewalks in the Tenderloin are now mostly passable, as if they ever weren't really passable. I was there 2 or 3 months ago, and yeah, there were a lot of people in tents, but you walked around them, you walked past them. That's where people have to live. You show some respect for that, and you move on. And if they're shooting up outside rather than shooting up in the comfort of their own private places, as people who are well-to-do can do, that's also happening, and you understand that. She said, the mayor said that while sidewalks in the Denver are now possible, or passable, mostly passable, many social ills remain. It's still really horrible. I just want to be honest, she said, adding the city needs to be more aggressive in combating drug dealing. The need to clean up the community so people who are walking down the street with a baby stroller don't have to go into the streets to walk around a bunch of people selling drugs and shooting up. I guess it's okay to walk around the fancier bars or the sidewalk wine tasting stuff, but, you know, if it's gritty drugs, that's a little different, I guess. Is that okay for families to have to live like that? Of course not, says our writer, but there's little consensus what to do about it. Tenderloin police continue to arrest dealers, and District Attorney Chelsea Boudin said in a written statement, these cases represent one of the largest categories of felonies handled by his office and the highest rate of felony rebookings, meaning another arrest for the same crime of any category. He doesn't believe that cycling dealers in and out of jail accomplishes anything, however, and wants to create a new specialty court for dealers who are trafficked from Honduras and work for drug cartels. He also wants the city to finally create the long-discussed safe injection site. It's got to be sites, I would think, not just one, where people can use drugs inside under supervision, and build treatment centers where people addicted to drugs can get help immediately. State Senator Scott Weiner has tried repeatedly to pass legislation giving San Francisco the authority to open a safe injection site, but has failed. The situation in the Tenderloin is unacceptable, Boudin said. If we want to save the Tenderloin, we need to make it easier to get help than it is to get high. You don't say. As for Alvarado, the grandmother of seven who emerges to run her errands once a week, the pinup child of this article, or the pinup granny of this article, she darted around men lounging on a couch on a sidewalk corner, around people selling items spread out on blankets. That's illegal in Santa Cruz. You have to be at least, I think it's a foot and a half off the ground, and only inside the sacred boxes on Pacific Avenue. And to the other side of the street, where she saw a block-long encampment that has since been cleared. She dodged a man screaming and waving his hands violently at nothing. I'm kind of scared, she said, periodically rubbing her gloved hands with sanitizer. Finally, she made it back to her apartment in Leavenworth, her rolling suitcase full of food and medicine. She said goodbye with a no-contact elbow bump. I think I'm all set now, she said. She was safe for one more week. And that's a story by San Francisco columnist, the Chronicle writer Heather Knight, who I'll probably try to avoid reading again. So it's more than time for a musical break. This is a parody called The Battle of Lake Travis by Don Caron and the Parody Project, whose songs I often play here. I'm going to give you some of the lyrics first so you can follow them, because they're a little hard, and also my recording equipment is going to be a little makeshift today. In 2020, a trip we all did take to show off our MAGA flags upon a Texas lake. We took a lots of flagpoles, and we took a lot of flags, and we took a lot of burgers that we stuffed into our bags. We packed our guns just in case we met some liberals. We packed some booze just in case they didn't show. We packed some books just to show we're educated. Don't ask what they're about. We cannot read, so we don't know. They told us we could come, though we didn't have a yacht. They said the more the merrier, though merry we are not. We said we are defenders of the cross and of the gun, and you're right to do most anything as long as it ain't fun. Packed our guns, and there's again the chorus there. We sat low in the water because the flags they pulled us down, and we prayed to Mother Mary that there were no yachts around. Till one came speeding by, a churning up a big old wave, we sank with not a single MAGA flag that we could save. Yeah, we brought our boats around, and we sat them in the water, and we started out a-sailing where an otter wouldn't go. Weighed down so heavy that a pump could never save us. If we spilled a cup of coffee to the bottom, we would go. Yeah, we got real wet when our boat went down below, and we cried real hard when our flags we couldn't show. It was a plot by Nancy and the nasty fellow Joe. We heard it out on Breitbart, and that's all we got to know. And here's the actual song itself, now that you've heard the lyrics.
In 2020, a trip we all did take to show up our mega flags upon a Texas lake. We took a lot of pickles, and we took a lot of flags, and we took a lot of burgers, and we stuffed into our bags. We packed our guns just in case we met some liberals. We packed some booze just in case we didn't show. We packed some books just to show we're educated. But that's what they're about, we cannot read, so we don't know. They told us we could come, although we didn't have a yacht. They said the more the merrier, though merry we are not. We said we are the fingers of the cross and then the gun, and you're right to do most anything as long as it ain't fun. We packed our guns just in case we met some liberals. We packed some booze just in case we didn't show. We packed some maps that would show us how to get home, but none of them got pictures, so we don't know where to go. We settled in the water, took the flight to cool it down, and we prayed to Mother Mary that there were no yachts around. So what could she see by a churning up a single wave? We sank with not a single mega flag that we could save. We packed our guns just in case we met some liberals. We packed some booze just in case we didn't show. We packed some drones, cause the Taliban of Texas might be lurking near the rock, so yeah, you never really know. Yeah, we thought it was along, and we sat them in the water, and we started out of steering, wearing out of wooden goo. Well, we ducked away, and he let a boat could never save us, and we stole a cup of coffee to the bottom, we would go. Yeah, we got real wet when our boat went down below, and we cried real hard when our flags we couldn't show. It was a plot by Nancy and a nasty fella Joe. We heard it on Red Martin, that is all we gotta know. We packed our guns just in case we met some liberals. We packed some booze just in case they didn't show. We donned the MAGA hats cause they make us feel like generals. We were getting ready to put on a killer show. Yeah, we bought them with some long and we sat them in the water. And we started out of sailing wearing out of wooden goo. We were down so heavy that a boat could never save us. If we spilled a cup of coffee to the bottom, we would go.
Another No One But Trump song called The Battle of Lake Travis. There's a little intro description. Lake Travis has been all over the news, so if you haven't heard about it, you're unusual. I actually hadn't heard about it. Hundreds of Trump fans with boats converged on Lake Travis and turned it into a churning blender of confused water. It took a few boats down. Experts came on the news to explain that the excess waves were due to the boats moving so slowly. No mention of the fact that in a small body of water has a maximum capacity for human toys. It's a law of physics, more consequences of ignoring science, so saith Don Carone and the, I guess it was also the Freedom Toast is what they call themselves. So as the so-called election draws nearer, with lots of paranoia and hysteria ramping up on all sides as to which side of the corporate duopoly Biden or Trump is going to win this particular show election, I continue to remind folks that the real issue is Trumpism, whether it's from Biden or from Trump. And if you're going to get Biden to go in the other direction rather than pander to all the babble about law and order that Trump is now spouting in order to get a sort of a last-minute grip and mobilize his base and so forth, you have to tell him you're not going to vote for him, that is Biden or Trump, unless they actually come up with something solid and decent. And to simply say you're going to vote for him because you want anyone but Trump is to give away your vote to begin with. Waste your vote. Throw it away. And throw away any pressure you may have on Biden. So that's my thought, and so whenever I hear the Anybody But Trump songs, I begin to growl. So, and this is not to be construed as an endorsement of Donald Trump, obviously. So some weeks back, before the fires forced Free Radio and me to evacuate Felton for a week and a half, I went to it was the last large protest that I've been aware of that's happened in this area. Maybe there's some stuff, probably has been, that I haven't heard about, or it would be great if that was true. But this was a protest that happened at City Hall. I think it was on the Tuesday when the City Council was, I think it was a Tuesday, it was August 18th. And that would have been, that was a Tuesday. And it was a Tuesday when the City Council is not normally meeting, but I think they had some special meeting. But again, it wasn't a meeting at City Hall. It was a meeting from the privacy of their own homes on this defective Zoom system where you can't hear what they're saying. You can't get in for much time. You can't be present, even though they have the option, of course, to allow social distancing and to set up a meeting in an area where people could actually attend. But, of course, that would be inviting the public to participate, and that's always risky because then they may see through the fact that they don't really want the public to participate. And most of what they've been doing the last few years has been to discourage and constrict and shut down public participation little by little by little, kind of the camel's nose in the tent approach or the salami approach. You keep slicing off bits until there's no salami left. Anyway, this was a protest about the city's favoritism toward and discrimination against, well, favoritism toward businesses on Beach Street, a falafel owner and a couple of businesses got involved in a fracas with some of the Latina vendors. And so the response of the city manager was to shut all the vendors down and essentially, instead of giving, well, justice to the vendors who were assaulted and so forth and whose cart was knocked over, they banned vendors on Beach Street. And that's going to be the case until the beginning of October, although there's some sort of half-assed claim that they're going to be negotiating some changes behind closed doors, of course. But anyway, there was a large protest against this behavior by the city council and the city manager, who really is the executive officer in the city. You know, he does what he does. And the vendors from the beach area, the beach flats area and out of town who come to town with their carts, gathered at City Hall with their various items that they sell. They sold their food, their clothing, their jewelry and so forth, the textiles they sell. And it was kind of a public event. A public square was created. And here's some of the speakers. Here's some of the discussion. Here's me interviewing different people at that event on August 18th. And it also has to be said, it wasn't simply about the vendors. It was about the city's refusing to defund the police or allow any real discussion about the issue or hear the voices of the people who wanted to change how the police are operating here so that the national Black Lives Matter movement could have its real impact here on racism in Santa Cruz and police abuse in Santa Cruz. And at one point there was a march to Cynthia Matthews' house. Here's some of the speaking and what happened.
So today is August 18th, it's about 15 after 1. I'm headed for City Hall. The weather was supposed to be real hot, but apparently that was for yesterday rather than today. They announced there was going to be a march from the town clock, but there weren't but a few people there when we arrived around 1, 1:10 or 1:15. It looks like people have already marched or else came directly to City Hall. People are kind of gathered in little groups from 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, a couple hundred people here, I would guess. So, did you march from...
No.
May I record this?
Not right now, right?
Okay.
That's my meditation. Yeah, so what people are...
So never ask permission, always ask forgiveness. There's a large placard. The Shen vendors. So I'm with Free Radio. What brings you here? Mm-hmm. You want to say something for Free Radio?
No, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, though.
What brings you here?
Police brutality.
Wait. Say it again.
Police brutality and the fact that cops are trying to harass vendors out of our city.
Is this your first protest, or is this one of a number of continuing efforts?
I've been to a few of the protests.
And today is a city council meeting, a special session. Are you hoping or expecting anything to come out of that?
Of course I'm hoping that good things come out of it, but probably going to be a slow-moving thing.
Have you yourself experienced any problems with police locally, or have your friends had any direct experiences of that kind?
I've definitely had personal experiences with the police here. None of them have been good.
Long ago, recently?
Recently? I'm sorry, what is it for?
Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Okay. Yeah, that was recent, like in the past year or so.
Were you able to get any kind of response? Did you complain about it? Did you raise the issue? How did you let the community know what happened?
I talked to Justin Cummings about it.
And what did then, I guess, Vice Mayor or say about it?
He said he would talk to the chief police officer, what's his name?
Andy
Mills, yeah.
You got a positive response in terms of the police action, or reassurance simply from Cummings?
Reassurance from Cummings, yeah.
What was the nature of the incident that you had with police officers?
I'd rather not talk about it.
Was it violent or was it non-violent? Let me ask you that.
It was violent, I would say.
Is that officer still on duty as far as you know?
No, I have no idea. Yeah, I actually don't want to talk about it anymore. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you for mentioning that. I want to give a first name. You don't have to say who you are.
Thank you.
I encourage you not to be afraid of this kind of stuff. It's important to get out to the community.
I've already spoken about it at another protest.
I see. Fair enough. Yeah, I just noticed a lot of people are reluctant to say anything about anything. And it's, I don't think it's that helpful to the community, but I'm glad you guys are here.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any reports from the police about what's been happening from your neck of the woods?
From my neck of the woods?
Yeah.
What's my neck of the woods?
I don't know. What is your neck of the woods? Well, here's somebody.
Thank you all so much for coming through all the way right now, pressuring, all the way throughout the city, calls so we can pressure city council to call for a defunding of the police and a refunding of the community, because people power is how we get the power,
so we have a large banner, refund SCPD, refund community, refund vendors, refund SCPD.
So right now, everyone just, you know, everyone can like just pull out. I know like the heat is a lot, it's a little bit of humidity, but you know, that's definitely, let's get the heat on going on, so we can definitely prepare and stand for our vendors to support our vendors as well, because that is necessary. Right now they're under attack, and what do we do?
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. All right, James, thank you all so much. 5 minutes to start, and yes, it's inside.
I don't see any establishment media here, but there are a few, at least one woman with a video camera, a variety of signs. Here, not cops, refund community. No justice, no peace. Cops protect capitalism for people. Again, a lot of general statements: abolish ICE, abolish cops, abolish prison. Karen, you have the power to stop this. Not sure who Karen is here. Maybe Keith can give me some idea. Keith McHenry. Who is Karen? Is there someone in the science of Karen? You have the power to stop it.
What is it saying? I have no idea. What sign are you looking at?
Karen, you have the power to stop it. Karen is in red. You have the power.
Karens are those whiny suburban white women that call the police on black people when they see them in their community.
That's kind of a generic name.
Yeah, the people that are Karens are the named after like a particularly egregious woman that was viciously attacking a black person or family, I forget which, and had called the police, and it was all filmed, and it's become like the all the times that particularly that women like rage against people of color.
Anything new happening with Food Not Bombs? I've heard there is a move afoot by the city manager to take some action against Food Not Bombs.
We've heard like from Sandy Brown, and we heard in some vague announcements at City Council that they were going to take care of it. Something about a permit issue, but it's all still very vague. I think the main point now is that city manager Martine Bernal, who lives up by the Dominican Hospital, is having executive orders, one after another, either supporting large corporate businesses or restaurants or, you know, the livelihoods of his friends, while executive orders against people that he deems non-profit, unprofitable or whatever, a riffraff or a drain on the beautiful tourist industry or something like that. So he's essentially a dictator, and that should be addressed. And you might have seen Abby Samuels' video that's been passed around, her interview of Justin Cummings, and it's, you know, he's, boy, if he... Somebody today would say, yeah, she's a real representation of that kind of Biden, we're for nothing, we're for all kind of a position, and not being very definitive about, you know, he's not like totally coming out against Martine Bernal's right, alleged right to dictate what goes on in the city, but then, you know, so he didn't endorse it, he didn't support it. But that position itself is an endorsement, because if you think it's okay that one super rich guy gets to determine everything in your city, and you're the mayor, and you're not against that, then there's something really wrong with you. And the fact that you're not, like, organizing a movement to take back the city from Martine Bernal is basically his endorsement of Martine Bernal's policies. And he just isn't brave enough to out and out state that's his position.
And, of course, Justin Cummings, who I continue to call the kind of the Uncle Tom, turned out to be the Uncle Tom kind of candidate that was elected in progressive clothing and then ran the other way. Or, I don't know if he ran, or he just went the other way. And he was essentially... did very little, sat on his hands while his colleague and the more outspoken Drew Glover was recalled, as well as the fourth member of their coalition, Chris Crone. And so now Cummings has no coalition. He is almost always on the losing end of 4-3 votes at city council when he makes these sort of, I call them token liberal moves, because they aren't really significant. There was a move at the last city council meeting 2 days ago to have a, it's not excess profits tax, that would be interesting, but rather if people are profiteering more than 10% raising of prices, or mostly tenants, rentals, then that would be banned or discouraged. And he couldn't even get that one past the Cynthia Matthews, Martine Watkins reactionary deadlock or hammerlock on city council. It's what it is. Keith McHenry's concern about city manager Brunel going after Food Not Bombs has turned out so far to be, I wouldn't say necessarily unfounded or ungrounded, but luckily that hasn't happened, although police have occasionally showed up at the Food Not Bombs lot, which is open every day for food and various other items you can get that you need, and you free at Laurel and Front Streets. During the weekends, it's 4 to 6, that's Saturday and Sunday, and during weekdays, it's at least 1 to 6. So check it out. The general mood I'm finding as I listen to this almost month-old protest, the last of the protests, is it's kind of depressing to me because the people that I individually talked to were very cold and brusque, and I found it unfortunate that I didn't respond a little more in a more hearty fashion to the barriers that seemed to be going up when I was asking them questions, and the dodges I got, the apprehension, the distance. But let's hear some more.
And we've been talking with, of course, Keith McHenry with Food Not Bombs, and we do need a lot more volunteers. We're getting very organized in our shift scheduling and everything, so if you had any difficulty connecting with us about what the best times to go, we've been nuancing that whole system, and we need a lot of volunteers because it is the more people we have participating, the less burned out people will be, and the more we will be able to continue to do this. There is not much movement in any way, state, federal, or city or county, to address the eviction chaos that is upon us. It's already happening. In fact, it's quite the opposite. It seems like the policies, particularly of the city of Santa Cruz, are to increase repression against people living outside, particularly taking vehicles. When you first are evicted from your apartment in the United States, many people, their first thing they do is move to their vehicle. And then once that's taken, they've lost everything. And this could be a huge, huge crisis. And
I want to hear more about this, but I'm going to try to grab a few folks before the mass events start. So I'll be back.
Sure.
I'll probably talk to you again.
Yeah. Well, foodnotbombs.net, please come there and check it out and volunteer with Food Not Bombs wherever you are, particularly if you're in Santa Cruz where we need a lot of support right now.
So the first speaker is a woman named Alicia, not Alicia Cool. It's another Alicia. And it's a little hard to hear, but see if you can hear it. So the actual recording quality is pretty bad. So I'm going to try to skip to the more audible sections. Part of it was the mic system or the speaker system. In any case, they had vendors speaking for themselves, and they spoke in Spanish and were translated by a volunteer from the crowd, and that's what we're going to hear now.
And yeah, there's so much to say. Pretty much Alicia was targeted. I want to say on Sunday morning, this ordinance that happened against vendors was placed, I think, talked about on Thursday, happened on Friday, and so many activists came out and were being advocates in their defense to begin with, because no one else can do it from the city for some reason, you know? We came here within a week or so, and we were able to have a conversation that the city doesn't want to do. And these people are transparent about everything, and it's unfortunate that we can't even just have the communication. We have to go straight to enforcement, and that's ridiculous. Even in the ordinance, us speaking to the actual chief of police, you know, stating that they were going to start with warnings, they were going to start with maybe ticketing, and then the last resort would go to
getting police informant and fence men and having people arrested. And the very last thing, taking away their items, which happened to all the people that were arrested, by the way. That is just a human right on the street.
And so the details are that, well, I don't actually have the details easily at hand, but vendors were pretty quickly, when they reappeared on the scene after being told not to be there, their merchandise was taken and they were arrested. And this provoked some serious outrage, and you're going to hear the discussion of that, or the expression of that.
On Saturday, we got the first notice from the city saying that there was an ordinance that we could no longer sell in Santa Cruz.
Pues ya nosotros nos metimos a vender ahora sí. Para el domingo nos llegó a temprano otra vez con el mismo aviso, simplemente que nos hicieron prestar y nos iban a prestar sin ningún.
We continued selling. On Sunday, they came and they threatened us with arrest if we continued.
Y pues aún así, metimos las cosas para la arena y pusimos pues nuestro puesto ahí en la arena y pues y llegó la policía primero antes que nosotros, nosotros corrimos porque nos iban a levantar las cosas adentro.
We set up our booths on the sand and the police came. And they were going to take our things, and we ran to protect our things.
Y pues al momento que llegamos adentro, nos plantamos enfrente de la mercancía que vendemos adentro, los paraguas y los juguetes, y les dijimos que no iban a dejar que se las llevaran.
We sell umbrellas and toys, and we stood between our merchandise and them, and we said we wouldn't let them take them.
Y pues ellos empezaron a que no era permitido por la ley que viene implementado y que ya nos habían dado un aviso que no podíamos estar ahí, que iban a dar un ticket y sacaron sus libretas.
They said they had given us notice already that it was not allowed and they took out their notebooks to give us a ticket.
Y pues en ese momento preguntaron que quién era la encargada de las cosas que se habían entrado. En ese momento dije que yo, pero nunca preguntaron quién era el dueño. Yo no era dueña. Soy yo, vi entrado con las personas que habían entrado a vender. Y pues yo les pido las cosas que están adentro.
So they asked who was in charge, and I said I was. But I wasn't the owner of the merchandise. They didn't ask me who the owner was.
Y pues en ese momento me pidieron una identificación, que porque me iban a dar un ticket de $1,000 por haber incumplido la ley que se había implementado en Santa Cruz, y yo me negué a dar mi identificación. Dije que no le iba a dar una identificación porque no era justo que me dieran un ticket de $1,000.
They asked me for my ID, and I refused to give my ID. They said they would give me a ticket for $1,000, and I said, I refuse to give you my ID. I don't deserve a ticket.
That's right. That's right.
Dijeron que eso merecía un arresto si no les entregaba una identificación, que me iban a arrestar. En ese momento yo les dije que si tenían un motivo, una causa por qué arrestarme, que estaba bien. Yo no me estaba oponiendo a que me arrestaran.
At that moment, they threatened to arrest me if I didn't show my ID. And I said, look, if there is a reason for my arrest, I won't resist, but please give me a reason. I don't understand why.
That's right.
Y pues yo, el policía se vino y yo entregué mi cartera que ando puesta y mi celular con el que estaba grabando a mi hermano, se lo entregué y el policía se vino hacia mí a arrestarme.
I gave my brother my bag and my cell phone where I had been filming what was going on and the policeman came toward me to arrest me.
En ningún momento me obstuve a que me arrestaran y yo misma les dije que me arrestaran. Al momento de arrestarme fueron pues demasiado groseros, me lastimaron, me doblaron las manos para atrás cuando yo estaba permitiendo que me arrestaran. No me estaba negando a que lo hicieran.
At no point did I resist arrest. I showed them my hands. They were very forceful with me. They hurt me. They bended my hands backward, and they injured me.
y pues me agarraron atrás, me pusieron las esposas demasiado fuerte y me agarraron a como forzándome a subirme a la patrulla cuando yo no me estaba forzando a arrestarme, y no querían que nadie de mi familia ni nadie que estaba ahí grabaran pues cómo fue el arresto, porque fueron pues groseros injustamente cuando no había un porqué, no me estaba negando nada.
Like I said, I didn't resist. They handcuffed me with a lot of force. They pushed me into the van, even though I was willingly walking. And they didn't want any member of my family to film what was happening because they were being so rough on me.
Pues me forzaron, me pusieron contra la patrulla para revisarme las bolsas. La oficial que había llegado, mujer, me estaba doblando la muñeca, contaminándomela contra las esposas, y me estaban revisando entre dos personas, y no estaba yo negándome a que me revisaran tampoco las bolsas ni nada.
They, how do you say that when they... They pat me down, they looked and they searched my pockets. A woman, an officer, was holding my wrist and pushing it against the handcuffs and really hurting me. There were two people, she and another officer, were searching me. They were very rough.
En ese momento, mi hermana quiso grabar más a fondo lo que estaba pasando y la policía la empezó a puchar de su hombro. Y no la dejaban que grabara, que le decía que se hicieran a un lado. Y ella no hizo caso, le estaban empujando en su hombro. Y a mí me estaban forzando a subirme a una patrulla cuando yo no me estaba negando a subirme.
At that moment, my sister was trying to film everything, and they started to push her on the shoulder, pushing her away so that they wouldn't film. And again, I was cooperating in every way.
Name the cops.
Y al momento que ya me subieron a la patrulla, pues uno de mis compañeros abrió la puerta, pero arrestaron a una persona que no abrió la puerta. So, nomás se fueron al primero que vieron, ese agarraron y ese se llevaron. No se llevaron a la persona correcta.
So somebody came and opened the door of the patrol car, but they arrested somebody else, like somebody who hadn't done that. They just came and grabbed the first person they could find, and they didn't take the right person.
Name the cop.
Al momento que nos llevaron, que nos llevaban en la patrulla con el muchacho que viene arrestado junto conmigo, la policía se iba riendo, la sargento que nos arrestó, la policía mujer, se iba riendo de que nos iba a hacer que nos dieran un como alguna constancia que ya no nos pudiéramos acercar a vender a la playa, y a lo que le dijimos que nosotros íbamos a seguir luchando por vender adentro en la arena.
When they were taking me and the other young man in the police car, the woman officer who had arrested us was laughing, saying that we're going to make sure that you never sail on the beach again. But we said we were going to continue to pursue that right and to try to make a living by vending our stuff on the beach.
Who was she?
Camioneta del oficial adentro en la estación del sheriff, nos mantuvieron alrededor de 45 minutos adentro de la patrulla esposados, nomás con las ventanas abajo, pero no nos entraron para adentro, nos tuvieron 45 minutos aguantando calor en la patrulla y con esposas, y yo tenía bien fuerte las esposas, le dije y no me las quisieron aflojar hasta el momento que me pusieron a alguien que hablaba español, un oficial que hablara español.
They kept us in the police car for 45 minutes in the hot sun with the windows down, but they made us wait for 45 minutes, and I kept telling them that the handcuffs were really hurting my wrists, and they did nothing to loosen them until 45 minutes later they got somebody who spoke Spanish to talk to me.
Y cuando me pusieron que hablaba español, era una sheriff, y pues ella ya me aflojó, la propia policía que me arrestó me aflojó las esposas, pero pues me dejaron pues marcas rojas en donde yo había estado aguantando mucho la esposa en esta mano, que fue la misma mano que me dobló para contaminarme contra la esposa cuando me arrestaron.
When finally the officer who spoke Spanish came and spoke to me, they loosened my the handcuffs on my wrists, but by that time I was pretty injured, and it was the same wrist that they had pushed before when they were trying to, to hold me.
Al momento que estaba adentro, ya pues que me entraron para adentro, me preguntaron que pues que por qué no di mi información, y yo les dije que prefería que me arrestaran y dar la información en la estación de policía, pero no se lo iba a dar a esa persona, que los cargos que según me llevó por no entregar una identificación, pero en realidad ella amenazó con un ticket de $1,000 y no fue la versión que fue a dar en la estación de policía.
So the people at the police station asked me why I wouldn't give my ID, and I said I didn't agree with the charges. I didn't think it was fair for them to give me a $1,000 ticket. And yet the person who brought me in gave a different version of the story.
Y pues al final pues me pusieron cargos por ser dueña y por ventas, cuando yo no entro a vender. Sí apoyo y estoy con mi familia que vende, pero no entro a vender a la arena, y pues me acusaron de todos delitos, ser dueña y ser vendedora. So, tengo dos cargos que enfrentar en la corte para la fecha que me pusieron.
So I've been charged with two things: being the owner of the merchandise and selling the merchandise. I help my family, they sell, but I'm not usually the seller, and I certainly am not the owner of this merchandise. Those are the two charges that I need to respond to in court.
Y pues ya estuve ahí aproximadamente 4 horas. A las 4 horas me sacaron, que porque no me dijo el oficial que no, yo no tenía nada que hacer ahí, que nomás era por no haber entregado mi nombre. Y pues ya a las 4 horas me sacaron, y todavía me preguntaron que para dónde iba, y yo les dije que no les iba a mentir, yo no iba para mi casa, iba para la playa donde me estaba esperando mi familia.
4 hours later, they told me, you have nothing to do here, and they let me go. And they asked me where I was going, and I didn't lie to them. I said, I'm not going home. I'm going back to the beach where my family is waiting for me.
Hasta noviembre que tengo mi corte, y pues, pues sí, voy a ir a mi corte y pues defender mis derechos, porque no tienen una prueba de lo que me acusaron. De ninguna de las dos cosas tienen pruebas.
So my court date is in November, and all I can do is wait until that moment and show up. And they have no proof of neither one of the things that they accuse me of. So I will be there.
We'll be there.
We'll be there. We'll be there. We'll be there.
Por mi parte, pues es todo lo que he vivido, pues de la violencia acá, desde los policías hacia nosotros. En las personas que venden conmigo, pues ayer también sufrieron su altercado contra la policía injustamente.
This is what I've lived through with the police here, and some of the people who sell that I know suffered another confrontation yesterday.
Who were the cops?
Yeah, get the cop names.
Muchas gracias por apoyarnos tantos. Hay muchas personas que nos están apoyando. Les agradecemos mucho. Porque la policía contra los vendedores, pues son unas personas racistas, pero cuando hay muchas más personas, ellos no tienen valor de hacernos una discriminación ni hacernos nada.
Thank you so much for your support. Please feel your support. When there are many witnesses, they won't be so brave or so daring to try to hurt us. Thank you so much.
Yes.
And the voice calling from the side, who were the cops? That was me. But unfortunately, I was shouting in English, and she speaks Spanish. Her translator didn't seem interested in passing on the word. And the real question that should have been asked was, los nombres de la policía, por favor. Los nombres de la policía. The names of the police, please. The names of the police. So, handy tip the next time you're at a dual language event or a Spanish-only event. And now a little música, por favor.
I don't know, doctor. I've never tried therapy before, let alone over Zoom or whatever. But I just have really been going through a rough time with this pandemic. You know, and I know you're not a shrink, but I just didn't know who else to go to. I mean, my country is a mess. I'm not even talking to it right now. I haven't had a haircut in, like, 5 months. I mean, I know I still look great. Thank you. But I just feel there's no leadership. And, you know, the president is even attacking you. Can't you stop him?
I don't have the qualifications to do that. I can only give people advice from the standpoint of public health.
Dr. Fauci, we know you're smart as hell. You're certainly no slouchy. You made it through Cornell. You fought some bad infections. But now you've hit a wall with the worst infection of them all. Anthony Fauci, so calm and precise. Your raspy voice is sexy and your glasses are nice. You follow the science on facts, you're a lie. You only want us not to die. What a guy.
What a guy, what a guy, what a lovely guy. Like he only.
Dr. Fauci's made some mistakes.
Sir, COVID cases continue to rise. Why would your administration try to discredit the nation's leading expert on infectious diseases?
It is what it is.
Dear Donald, you're satanic. You should have stayed in Queens while we're in full-on panic. You honkin' friggin' beans. The doctors try to save us, but you push them away. We're your mask. Just shut up, okay? Hey, Anthony Fauci, he's dragging us now. Forget the mask, just slap some masking tape on his mouth. While you help protect us, he prays it'll pass. He only covers his own ass.
His fat ass.
His own ass.
His own ass. His own big fat ass.
All he tries to save is his own ass.
Ivanka Trump finding herself accused of violating federal ethics laws.
She shared a photo endorsing Goya.
Bunka, take your Goya and blow it out your can. I know this might annoy ya, but we ain't got a plan. Your daddy wants to kill us. Your husband's even worse. Help me, Bunka. Quick, design a purse. Anthony Fauci, their strategy sucks. They slander all the experts and promote all the schmucks. And still some are buying the garbage they sell. But please save us, Fauci, we're in hell.
We're in hell, we're in hell, we're in hell.
The science should not stand in the way of this. Our schools are extremely important. They're essential, and they must reopen. Yes.
Hey, Kaylee, you're a dipstick, and please don't take offense. Have you been eating lipstick? You're making zero sense. You're pushing propaganda. You're acting like a snob. Love your hair, girl. Do your freaking job. Please, Anthony Fauci, we're all at a loss. We can't rely on Barbie and Cruella DeVos. He's winding them up, and they're playing his tune. They're rolling at the cold
baboons. They're baboons, they're baboons.
In a way, we're creating trouble.
The trouble is this lady. The trouble is he's mean. The trouble is he's shady. The trouble is this queen. The trouble is she's useless. The trouble is there's no plan.
Dr. Fauci, we're the one who stands. Anthony Fauci, we're down on our knees. Hey, girl.
But no one at the top can help us stop this disease.
Anthony Fauci.
Probably think I'm crazy.
I'm convinced of that.
And that was a reprise of G. Anthony Fauci, which I think I played a couple months ago, actually, maybe a couple weeks ago. It's Randy Rainbow again, of course. And now here's a bit more of the August 18th demonstration and gathering in support of the vendors, which unfortunately has not been repeated or resulted in the reappearance of the vendors, as far as I can see. But who knows? Maybe I'm missing something.
No to the police. Yes, to the vendors.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much. Gracias a todos. Alicia. Let's give all our love towards Alicia right now. La Reina Alicia. La Reina. Todo el amor. Todo el amor. All right. Thank you all so much for hearing out and for Alicia for amplifying her voice. Make sure that we keep this energy consistent till November, hasta noviembre, so we can follow all the way through in the court, so we can amplify the social power into people power at the same time, so we can protect Alicia at all costs.
Of course, it's not the November elections or the courts that are going to make any changes. It's going to be the people on the streets engaging in the persistent pressure that has had impact in Rochester, resignation of the chief police officers there, in Portland, where they're on their 105th day of protest. But in Santa Cruz, unfortunately, all is still and quiet, or the noise hasn't reached me recently.
The next guest and the next speaker that we're going to introduce right now, I've had the pleasure to march with them alongside. They're a great friend of me and of us in general. They are, you know, they're just a wealth of knowledge, honestly. I got so much love. I mean, words can't even describe for the amount of love I have for this person. So everyone, please welcome the great, the phenomenal, the beautiful, the godly, and the queen, Bree Bird.
Unfortunately, the host here, the master of ceremony, seems to think he's sort of like a talk show host, and that's how he sounds, and it's unfortunate. But here's the next speaker.
Of our community by the police that live and work and raise children besides some of us. So I want to begin a little bit before I talk with the land acknowledgement that we are on the unceded territory of the Alaska speaking Yupi tribe. And these folks are the descendants of the indigenous people who were taken to Mission San Juan Bautista and Mission Santa Cruz during Spanish colonization. And the Alaska tribal band is still here.
And unfortunately, as you can hear, it's pretty distorted, so I think we're going to have to pass over this. Come on, you fucker. What's your problem?
A lot of the media and conversations for the last months, years, decades have been, what does it mean to defund the police? What does it mean to abolish prison? What does it mean to upend a colonial system that never has accounted for everyone who has lived and worked here? So today is our attempt at doing this again and again. Right, I was here for the Juneteenth rally, and I advocated for folks feeding each other in the absence of the resources. Three community fridges have popped up in our town. We did that without the mayor, without the city council, without the police. We fed each other, and we can keep each other safe. And that's what this movement is about, learning how to keep each other safe every single day in new ways that reduce harm, that doesn't allow us to criminalize and brutalize our friends and our families, right? And so some people are like, what does this mean? Anybody can come? But what folks in low-income neighborhoods and, like, have been advocating when we say free our cousin, right? You know the value of their life even if you can't see it. And so what we're saying is that we see values in black lives. We see values in the lives that are constantly criminalized. And beyond just saying we support them, we want to give them the resources to thrive. We want to take the resources from the people who harass us and reroute them to folks like y'all who are trying to figure out what the hell is going on here, right? And it gets more powerful every day, right? One day longer, one day stronger. Each time we gather here and hear a new voice, hear from vendors, hear from folks who have been houseless, hear from folks who have been followed by the police, folks who have been followed by white supremacists and not protected by the police, which we know would never happen. But I just think that these are the signs that we can hold each other more accountable. And I think that each and every one of us is beyond capable, beyond powerful enough to recognize that this city, this nation, every settler nation has got to go, not just because it all up in the air, but because tangibly, on the ground, people lose their lives every day. Black folks lose their lives every 28 hours to police violence, and that's not even just the violence of the police. Trayvon Martin was killed by the community watch. We have to hold each of our members accountable. White supremacists need to know that they cannot snatch children out of their homes.
Right.
Folks in our town need to know you cannot follow houseless folks to figure out what they're about.
Yeah.
That's not your business. We need to learn how to collectively mind our business and allow people to get the resources and safety and the health care that they need. And anything beyond that is not our business. And we need to do a better job at doing what we can in the ways that we know how. Feeding, housing, clothing people, and also making sure that each and every one of us can work safely. Nobody, essential worker or not, should have to risk their life to feed our families so we can get something delivered. That's bullshit. We can come up with more spaces. Fuck the fourth, people were fed. We can do that each and every time. It doesn't have to be led by somebody you know. Get that energy. I have a neighbor who gives out free plums from her tree. She just put a box out. She just puts a box out. Don't ask no questions. Don't see who's coming in her yard. That's the type of way you can reroute your resources in your home. What do you do with leftovers? Who not bombs this down the street? What do you do with the clothes that you've been recondoing out of your closet? These are the things that we can do together. And we can practice them together over and over and over again until we get it right. This nation didn't form at once. They've had practice for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. We got to take that time back. We're giving ourselves hundreds and hundreds of years. We're going to take the time we need to fix it today, tomorrow, and the day after. Because we know that together, the people are stronger than any fucking nation anywhere. Thank you, and keep finding the pockets of resistance that matter to us in Santa Cruz, and then tap into bigger networks. But right now, coming together with houseless folks, with vendors, with single parents, with folks who are struggling to remain in their housing that they already have, with students who've been harassed by the local police and UCPD, all of that, teaching the kids over and over. We have to make sure that our pockets come together, and we're doing that, and they're terrified, and it's going to be great, and we're going to keep it pushing, because each and every one of us, like I said, is powerful enough to make this change, and I'm just so happy that we get to do it together. Thank you.
$31 million and some change.
Yeah.
27%
of the city's general fund budget. That said, the council also voted to ban predictive policing and facial recognition software, which are positive developments. But critical resistance creates an easy tool to help assess the efficacy of a given police reform. The tool distinguishes between reformist reforms, those that expand and legitimize police, and abolitionist reforms, those that diminish the power and impact of the police. To determine whether a given reform is reformist or abolitionist, we can ask four questions. Does the reform reduce funding to police? Does the reform challenge the notion that police increase public safety? Does the reform reduce tools, tactics, and technologies that police have at their disposal? Does the reform reduce the scale of policing? When the answers to these questions is no, as is the case with body cameras, additional police training, oversight boards, etc., we are dealing with superficial solutions that will not move us toward ending police violence. Reforms require an increase into police funding, resulting in the public ultimately funding their own harm. When the answers to these questions is yes, then we are moving towards reducing harm and reimagining what safety looks and feels like. The tool also provides examples of abolitionist reforms, including an end to paid administrative leave for cops under investigation, withholding pensions from cops who use excessive force, banning the rehiring of cops who use excessive force, requiring cops to be liable for their own settlements around misconduct, and ending police participation in military exercise. By defunding police, we can implement these types of reforms and redirect those resources into community-determined and community-led projects that support the needs of Santa Cruz residents. As the movement to defund the police spreads, it is pushing us to dig deep into our societal assumptions and fears around criminality and safety. We've been socially conditioned to believe that violent, malicious people will take over our neighborhoods if police are not there to protect us. From the war on crime to the Clinton crime bill, we've been brainwashed by fearmongers with agendas that we need police to keep us safe. But if we look at the data, the fact of the matter is that police spend most of their time responding to noise complaints, issuing parking and traffic citations, and dealing with other non-criminal issues.
Yeah, victimless crime, that's right. No victim, no crime.
Preventing crime does not start with the police, but rather with addressing the basic needs of community in a dignified way. Jones, who wrote that entire article, which I hope is going to be posted in Santa Cruz newspapers, Sentinel. We're hoping I'm going to push her for it, but yeah, that was all Vicki Jones, mother, organizer, educator.
And I'm not aware, unfortunately, that it was, as a daily subscriber to the Santa Cruz Urinal, as I like to characterize the Santa Cruz Sentinel.
All right, so that's that's good. How's everyone feeling right now? How's everyone doing? All right, sounds good, Joe. Sounds good. It sounds like we're doing good with the energy going up, but that was not enough. How are we doing? I said. I don't think that was not enough. Joe thought that was enough.
And I'm gonna skip the pep talks. I never much like that. Although I think I understand that there is a sense of power and solidarity in the solidarity that comes from being in a large group and standing up for an issue that it's hard to stand up for individually, particularly if you have the police force arrayed against you and you have the elite intelligentsia saying no, 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 and the progressive liberals saying go slow, and so forth. So there can be some purpose in the people united will never be defeated kind of chants, although they get to sound a little tiresome after a while. Although I was listening last night to Portland, Oregon. I think there were six different live streams were going out from there because every night those protesters are back at the police station demanding the police back off, disarm, get defunded, that the politicians do something about it. And the police, of course, respond with tear gas and other weapons of violence, although less than lethal weapons often, or at least that's what they call them. But what's interesting is the chants are a way of mobilizing energy and asserting a kind of unity and speaking back to the amassed military power of the essentially mob, the very well-organized mob of police officers, the militarized force. I may be playing some more of this August 18th protest and its various interviews associated with it on Sunday when I have a longer show, or often have a longer show, as long as I can keep on croaking. My voice tends to be giving out earlier and earlier, but that's another story. Let's hear a few interviews. Here's one from Berkeley with Street Spirit Master Distributor J.C. Orton, who is the guy who passes us the 100 or 200 issues of Street Spirit that the Huff Group then distributes to folks who are vendors, and there aren't not many of them in Santa Cruz, to sell or to homeless folks or just the general community to read. Here's J.C. Orton.
So I'm here in Berkeley at a unnamed restaurant with J.C. Orton, who is a man who feeds and informs and gives street spirit distribution opportunities to local homeless folks. Hey, J.C.
Hey, how you doing there, Robert?
Today is the 4th of September, 2020. It's around 15 after 12, and your daily schedule involves distribution of street spirits to distributors who further distribute it and hopefully reap a little benefit from it from 7 to 9 in the morning.
There's also the social aspect. Instead of being stuck, not being able to do anything, not having the street spirit, we put together protocols for our vendors, and now they're out there on the street, and not just so much they sell a paper and they get a couple bucks for it, but they're being able to re-socialize with society and their clientele over in front of Berkeley Bowl or over in front of Trader Joe's or wherever the particular location is. They get to reconnect with their people. I'm not talking about other street spirit vendors. I'm talking about the people they distribute the street spirit to.
Or middle-class people.
Something to their time.
Who can pay $2, right?
And it gives the satisfaction of doing something. When we didn't have the street spirit there for a couple of 2 or 3 months, it was tough. Yes, of course, street spirit raised money and was able to give all of our vendors $200 worth of stipends to keep them carrying over.
3 month period?
Well, it was $200 is what they got during the period that we didn't sell. We didn't push papers from March until July. So it was the other half of March, April and May, June. So it was like 3.5 months, I guess, is what you call it. And it was tough on them. And we don't have all of our vendors back now because some of them have, to put it simply, have given up. So we have about 40 or 50... about 40, I'd say, active vendors at this point. And we're hoping to recover our vendor family.
How many were you?
Oh, it's somewhere between 80 and 100 at its high point. And now that we had the virus still threatening their selling and distributing the papers, we have about 35 or 40 that are actually actively selling.
Did they report any difference in how they're treated by customers?
Well, the ones that have been able to reconnect with their customers, but then on the flip side, the customers aren't necessarily out in front of Berkeley Bowl or out in front of the different stores and whatnot, or the different locations where the vendors were selling the papers. The people that they would distribute the paper to are not there on the receiving end as well. So there's less of them going and moving the paper, and there's less people out there that are obtaining the paper from the vendors. So it's very difficult. It's frustrating.
Is there much distribution of street spirit among intentional homeless communities like here or there and the community down on the tracks? Where do we go?
Not, no. You have to be semi-functional to do all these things. Very important. And they don't necessarily pull it all together, which is unfortunate. Let me help you bag some of this stuff up here. Give me something to do.
Okay. So you were kind of asking for my predictions about the impact of the continuing the likelihood of an impact of the coronavirus and perhaps the electoral situation. You didn't mention that specifically, but that might have been part of what you were thinking about on the homeless community, or maybe you were talking about the broader community. What's your prediction about how things are going to go for homeless folks in the next 6 months?
Well, if the virus does go and dissipate or thin out, whatever the case may be, we don't necessarily want to return to the situation before, because now it appears that the community at large is responding better to all different aspects of the fact that we have the restrictions of the virus. You know, people are coming out and they say, well, we want to come out, we want to help serve the meal, we want to bring you some food, and we'll put this together and we'll put that together. But when this virus is over, everybody's not going to go back to sleep.
Plus, there'll be, I assume, more porta potties, if that's the case, as it was in Santa Cruz, have shown up here in Berkeley. More facilities.
Well, if the city wanted to get behind it, they could install regular potty potties. In other words, over in Europe, they have locations where, you know, you have public toilets. And rather public restrooms, you know, that are cleaned and people maintaining them, and they're kept nice and clean and whatnot. Somebody's on station all the time. But to do something like that is going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars that the city may or may not want to go and pony up, which is understandable.
Not could be done, to you,
would,
perhaps.
That would at least go and provide access to the can, which everybody has to use the can, you know, whether you're homeless or otherwise.
I know that there has been a kind of a crackdown on homeless people in the last few years. A new legislation has been proposed by a supposedly progressive mayor who has lost a lot of his progressive allies because he's not so progressive. Any predictions about where that's going to go?
Unfortunately not. I wish I could say it's going to go one way or it's going to go the other, but there's really no way of knowing. Have to sort of wait till things shake out a bit and see if they want to continue to do all this. And another problem that's going to be in its way is that the funding. Where's all this money going to come from? If it's coming from taxpayers, taxpayers have to be generating money. Businesses have to be generating taxes and you know, sales taxes and everything like that. And without that, where's the city going to get the money? And what about the federal government? If people aren't working, they're not going to be generating income. And if they're not generating as much income, there won't be as much income tax coming into the situation. And the impact is going to be a trickle down all over the place. You know, we could have a more than just a this problem with the virus, but we could have a problem with perhaps a deep depression, because there's no way to take care of everything.
Now, Berkeley has something of a rent-controlled situation, a limited rent control here, but there is a concern here we have in Santa Cruz, and I think statewide, if not nationally, with a predicted tidal wave of evictions coming up. Do you see that happening in Berkeley?
Well, I don't think it's limited to Berkeley. Whoever owns that particular piece of real estate that they're renting out, it's not so much the evictions. If your people that are not working are living in these rental placements, the landlords are not receiving their monies for it as well, unless that's going to be subsidized completely by the government. But then again, where's the government going to get the money? They just can't print more money because then the dollar's not going to be worth anything. It's only going to be worth 20 or 30 cents of the dollar, and we're not going to have much faith in things. This situation with the virus and the way the homeless are being treated has the ability to continue on for an extended period. And what we have to do is we have to take the care that is there now when things are over, if it does end, and we need to continue to care, not just because previously there was a problem with homelessness and a problem with the virus, but there's so much more to be involved there. You can take some of this stuff and put that in. That's the yummy stuff. There you go.
So
there's too many variables to give you the solid answer. That's the difficulty.
Now, Black Lives Matter is, of course, a significant factor in a lot of cities, particularly in the Bay Area and other large urban areas, particularly with the continuing police murders that are going on across the country. I would call them murders. Others might simply say shootings. What do you see this having much impact in Santa Cruz? Homeless people have also become a cause celebre for those who are trying to stop police abuse through defunding the police department, shifting funding to other areas, and so forth. Is the Black Lives Matter movement here in Berkeley having much impact in that regard?
Well, it's out there. There are different groups through churches, through different civic groups, trying to go and elevate the status of everybody, specifically the fact that black folks have been treated poorly, have been treated with substandard situations for so very many years. I mean, 100 years ago, women were finally given the right to vote.
But no one to vote for.
150 years ago, or 200 years ago, we had the Emancipation Proclamation, but that didn't mean everybody is going to be cool. It means it's a nice piece of paper and it sounds good, but people were still treated poorly. And down south, some of the different things that were happening down there were just unbelievable. If you went to a public park, you had a water fountain that was over here, and you had a water fountain over here, and you had one water fountain, which was the colored water fountain. Then you had the regular water
fountain.
Let's
talk about Berkeley, because that's where, where we are.
The situation is that people aren't being treated well, or being treated correctly.
Berkeley have a police violence problem. Are the homeless people facing that too?
With regard to
the way they're treated by the police, by the UCSC, UCB police, by the private security.
What's happened is the police have taken their level of enforcement and whatnot, and they're not pressing as hard as they used to. But then if we don't have a certain amount of enforcement, or at least people obeying the different laws and structures of society, then there has to be some sort of a structure there. And what we have now is we have a police department. What we really need to have is we need to have, instead of the money plugged into guys that wear badges and guns, we need to have it plugged into people that are out there on the streets, social workers, whatever it happens to be, that are out there, and not just there 8 to 5 during the day, because life is 24/7. So I have them coming out at night and taking care of people in need. And if we had a great focus of that as opposed to just the police, then things would shift.
Now, I'm familiar with the theory, and of course it's the arguments by many people in many cities. But what about in Berkeley specifically? Are there, you have an election coming up here. Does that have any, as far as you know, will this have any impact, any meaningful change, or will it be a shifting of the chairs on the deck of the Titanic?
I wish I could give you the answer to that. I can't.
Fair enough. And we've been talking with
J.C. Orton.
And J.C., what do you do here in Berkeley? How would you describe your function?
Three words. Love your neighbor.
So you're an official lover of neighbors?
Without exception.
You must have a very broad tolerance.
Well, I can put up with you, Robert.
Sometimes, yeah. But you cover your distaste well, I would say.
No, there's no problem with you, Robert, that's for sure. So the idea of taking care of not just society, but your neighbor, and accepting everybody as your neighbor, rather than going and restricting it out. You probably heard the old expression, God bless everybody, no exceptions. That means everybody's entitled to good footing, to good situations, for care, because they all count, regardless of their color, regardless of their religion, regardless of their disability or their ability, how much money they have, how much they don't have, they are all entitled to care.
And who is funding you, JC? Where is the money coming from? Who pays the rent?
For the worker, you mean?
For you, mister.
Well,
lover, neighbor guy.
Well, I get Social Security benefits, which is a minimal amount of money, and I scrape by on that. As far as the work that we do out on the streets and whatnot, we don't do any grant writing or fundraising, and people see us. They know what's going on, and since we've been doing it a long time, checks come in the mail to go and support the effort of what we're doing.
Dig it. And if people want to know more about what you're doing in Berkeley or what's happening in Berkeley, and let's say they have access to a computer, which most homeless people at this time do not, where should they go?
Well, at that point, they can just Google us or Google my name. And we have a very, very, very public phone number, 510-684-1892. And the nice thing about me, as opposed to all the big boy services and agencies, is I answer my phone.
I do notice that, generally speaking, though I have gotten your machine on occasion, for sure. So, and again,
pick up, yes.
And so, do you have a website or a Facebook page?
No, you can text me anything you want to that number.
And again, the number is
510-684-1892.
That's J.C. Orton. Any concluding thoughts, J.C.?
Give it a try. Love your neighbor. They're worth it. Because you're the neighbor to somebody else, and hopefully you are worth it to the rest of society. So join the party.
Thanks.
When the president talks to God, are the conversations brief or long? Does he ask to rape our women's rights and send poor farm kids off to die? Does God suggest an oil hike when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, are the consonants all hard or soft? Is he resolute all down the line? Is every issue black or white? Does what God say ever change his mind when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, does he fake that drawl or merely nod? Agree which convicts should be killed, where prisons should be built and filled, which voter fraud must be concealed when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, I wonder which one plays the better cop. We should find some jobs, the ghetto's broke. No, they're lazy, George, I say we don't. Just give them more liquor stores and dirty coke. That's what God recommends. When the president talks to God, do they drink near beer and go play golf? While they pick which countries to invade, which Muslim souls still can be saved? I guess God just calls a spade when the president talks to God. When the president talks to God, does he ever think that maybe he's not? That voice is just inside his head when he kneels next to the presidential bed? Does he ever smell his own bullshit when the president talks to God? I doubt it. I doubt it.
Man, that was Bright Eyes singing or intoning When the President Talks to God. And now to kind of finish up the show, here's a final interview with Alicia Cool that I did today. And, well, here it is for you.
Well, it's Thursday, September 10th. I'm on the line talking to mother and activist and city council candidate Alicia Cool, who is with the Santa Cruz Homeless Union, as well as numerous other groups, and herself has been living outside a lot, although I think you've been able to secure, at least temporarily, some kind of shelter, but not for long, that's what I understand. But I've been hearing, not so much directly from homeless people here, but reading about it in homeless newspapers and some, maybe perhaps online. And people in other cities, particularly up in the Bay Area, are really facing the problems of having no place to go. It's not just they're dropping over from heat prostration, you know, they, and they're having the problems with COVID and resources and just ordinary living problems, not to mention police harassment. But this business of having no place to get indoors away from the smoke is particularly damaging to people whose lungs are vulnerable, and that can be people outside. Have you had any experience with this yourself, run into this much? Any thoughts on this?
Well, I do know that I've heard a lot of people saying that the smoke bothers them. It was really eerie yesterday when the sunlight didn't come out at all and it was dark all day. So I know a lot of people are suffering from that. Mm-hmm.
Have you heard much in terms of people actually having to seek medical assistance, like go to hospitals because of lung problems, needing inhalers that aren't around, things of that sort?
I haven't heard anything like that, like to the point where it required a hospitalization or anything, or a doctor's visit, but that doesn't mean it's not happening. I mean, I haven't heard of anybody suffering that severely.
Mm-hmm. Any other reports? We talked at some length yesterday when you came to the Huff meeting, and I'm going to maybe play some of that, if not today, then on Sunday. But has anything happened in the last day or two, or have other things occurred to you that you might want to mention that you think are important for people to know about that they might not otherwise be aware of?